Good morning, everyone. I'm John Myrie, and welcome to the Wisconsin Northland Outdoors. On this week's show, we have tips and reports for you from Jarrett McCarthy down at Hayward Bait and Bottle. And then I had a chance to talk to Hayward Area Fishing Guide Ty Semmes. And then lastly, we'll have the second part of that talk we had with our local DNR wildlife biologist, Josh Siegel. Lots to cover on this week's show, all coming up right after these messages.
Get on the water today with the Lund Catch of the Year at Hayward Power Sports. We have Lunds in stock, rigged and ready with Mercury outboards. Save $1,000 on a 1650 Angler SS, $2,500 on a Lund Impact, or a whopping $3,000 on a 1975 Pro V Sport. Lund features boating's best warranty with 3 years of bow to stern and lifetime hull coverage. And no boat holds its value better. Get your Lund at Hayward Power Sports, just 10 minutes east of Hayward on Highway 77.
Riding along in my automobile.
Bumping into things unexpectedly? Make your first choice for collision repair. Ernie's Auto Body, featuring the most advanced collision repair facility in northwest Wisconsin. With a state-of-the-art spray bake-down draft paint booth for that better-than-new finish, laser technology for precision frame alignment, loaner cars available, computerized estimates, written guarantees, and documented unmatched customer service, the clear choice is Ernie's Auto Body, south of Hayward on Highway 63 and Nursery Road, where quality is no accident.
Lynn's Custom Meats and Catering welcomes you to stop by for their great lunch menu. And while you're there, Lynn's also has a great selection of custom-cut meats and sausages, as well as many varieties of snack sticks, jerky, fresh cheese curds, and much more. Lynn's is open Mondays through Fridays from 9 to 5:30 and 9 to 4 on Saturdays. Lynn's Custom Meats and Catering in Hayward. We're recording a show down here at Hayward Bait and Bottle. I got Jarrett McCarthy in here. Jarrett, good to have you on here. It looks like we're really setting in winter now. We're making ice pretty good.
Making ice, snow's falling, fish are biting, we're in the go.
Won't be long here, and we're past all the hunting seasons as we're recording this. We still got a few days left of the muzzleloader season, but we'll be past all the hunting seasons, and it'll be mostly snowmobiling and ice fishing, I think.
Snowmobiling and ice fishing. It's what the North is built on in the winter.
Let's talk about the ice fishing early. What have you heard so far? I know the ice is getting a little better out there.
Yeah, definitely getting a little better. Kind of got a little scary when we got that big snow a week and a half ago or so. We were curious about what that was going to do to the ice, but looks like in most spots, a lot of that snow blew off the lake, and we're seeing anywhere between 3 and 6 inches on a lot of lakes right now. Some of the big lakes are just freezing up right now with that cold snap that we had this last weekend. But fishing's been good right away. You know, before we had that snow, when the season was still open on the chip, guys were doing really well for walleyes. Now that it's closed, guys are going to be starting to get back out on grindstone rounds, starting to look for walleyes out there. But fishing's been good so far.
You heard much as far as what they're getting, some nice walleyes, or you know, how deep they've been getting them or anything?
A lot of the depth right now is 5 to 10 feet. Those walleyes are up shallow. Not getting a lot of big walleyes, a lot of eaters right now.
You bet. You know, a lot of people think they got to go deep water all the time. We were just talking about that up front here at the counter. People go to deep water, but the water temperature is always going to be about the same whether you're in 10 feet of water or you're in 30 feet of water in the wintertime on the bottom.
Yeah, and right now, since we're in early winter and we just had ice up, a lot of that weed growth up shallow is still going to be fairly healthy, which is going to attract your whole food system. So that's going to take all your panfish up shallow, and obviously your bass, northern walleye will follow. So until we get to midwinter, when all those weeds start to die off, those fish will stay fairly shallow.
You know, and food is a big thing. There are going to be two things: the comfort, and that's the water temperature, and the food. They got to have something to eat.
Yep, and then you go with oxygen as the last factor. And, you know, while we're still early on in winter, there's still plenty of oxygen up shallow, so those fish can move freely up there. But as we get towards midwinter and late winter, then you'll start to see those fish move out into deeper water.
You know, part of that too is the fact that once you get a lot of snow cover, the light, more of the weeds start to die off. You don't have the green weeds that are still getting a little bit of sunlight through that ice and producing oxygen, and then all of a sudden they're eating oxygen up. So the fish move away from the brown weeds pretty quick.
Yep, they really do. And you know, as we get more ice and more snow, they'll die a lot faster.
you know. And well, you know, finding the green weeds is important anytime you're out there this time of the year. A good way to find them, if you can't see through the ice and see, you know, real good and clear water, you can use underwater cameras. Some of the AquaView stuff is really good. You can find the weeds real easy.
Yep, and that's exactly what I do. Looking for weed lines early on in the year, I take my little Markham Recon 5, and I go hole to hole where I've got tip-ups, and I look and see, you know, just how far I am off the weed line, if I'm in the weeds, if I'm off the weeds. So getting your setup down accurately will go a long ways for you with catching fish. You know, you could be missing a lot of bites if you're 10 feet further from the weed line than you should be, because, you know, the fish use those weed lines like we use hideways. They're constantly roaming them looking for, you know, bluegills or perch that are just, you know, make the mistake of venturing out too far from the weeds. But yeah, those underwater cameras can do a lot for you.
Let's talk a little bit about pan fishing. I think majority of people are after walleyes right now, but you know, overall, there are more people fish for panfish in the wintertime, I think, because they want to take home a few fish to eat.
Yep. I mean, panfish are so much fun to get on. I love getting out for crappies and bluegills. It's definitely more rewarding because, you know, a lot of guys, they go out and they catch two or three walleyes, and that's a great day for them. But if you go out and you're two or three panfish, that's a little bit less rewarding. And, you know, one of the benefits to fishing panfish is you're going to catch a lot more. And this time of year, you know, a lot of those panfish are up in the weeds. There are some that are still, you know, out roaming the basins already, but unfortunately we don't have enough ice to get out to those fish. So, yeah, you're looking for everything almost in the same place right now, up shallow in those weeds.
How much of a difference does it going to a more delicate presentation make? I mean, I use really finer line 4-pound fluorocarbon, and I use tiny, tiny jigs. A lot of people are still out there trying to use 8-ounce and quarter ounce jigs on 8-10-pound test line. You'll catch some panfish, but I think it makes a big difference going to a little bit smaller gear.
It really does, especially with how much the water has cooled off in the summertime when you're using those bigger baits out there. The fish have a much higher metabolism, and they'll more freely chase big baits, you know, and those baits that, you know, if you're running them through the ice, you'll still catch a few of those more active fish. But a lot of those fish, they don't want to chase. They don't want to move a whole bunch. They want to sit and they want to stare at those baits. So dropping that presentation ever so subtly will help you catch more fish, especially fish that are in a negative mood.
Yeah, there's a time and a place for bigger presentations, heavier jigs and everything else, but that usually I reserve that where I know I've got some really big slab crappies present, because they'll eat something bigger. But as far as bluegills, what do you recommend for people trying for bait and stuff out there?
So right now for bluegills, I mean, you're probably going to be using one of the smaller tungsten jigs tipped with either a spike or a waxy. If you've got a lot of bluegills in the area, you can start to run a little bit bigger a jig. One of the things that I look at when I'm fishing out there is how many fish do I have in the area. So if I'm out there crappie fishing in one of the basins in the wintertime and I've got a school of crappies underneath me, I'm going to go with a little bit bigger presentation because I know that there's going to be some competition there. But if I'm fishing early ice and I know I've got one or two fish coming through, not going to be a whole lot of competition trying to get to that bait. So I'm going to go a little bit smaller. You know, spikes, waxies, and really, really small plastics will work really well for bluegills.
You know, one thing I found too with bluegills that seem to work pretty good sometimes when they just don't want to go after finesse stuff is go with a small jigging spoon with a couple of waxies tagged on a little treble hook and catch bluegills like crazy on it. Sometimes.
Oh, yeah. Yep. Those tiny little jigging spoons, and, you know, even those bigger slender spoons I've caught some really, really nice bluegills on. It's a little overkill for a bluegill using a 1/8-ounce slender spoon when I'm, you know, usually fishing for crappies on it. But, man, yeah, they work.
How about northern pike fishing? That's pretty good, too, right now.
Yeah, it's really good. A lot of guys are out there fishing tip-ups right now, using northern suckers. They're using bigger dead baits. They're using big shiners. But, yeah, fishing for northern's been solid out there, and they're a great fish to eat.
You bet. And that is a good point, because right now, rather than keep the lakes, you can still keep 25 crappies on. There are a few. Most of them went to 10. You know, only keep 5 or 10 crappies, but, you know, get a few northerns add in there for the fish fry. As far as the fishing equipment, you guys got here in the shop, you got everything they need, from the shacks, the augers, the tungsten jigs, everything.
Oh, we've got everything and, you know, and more here. We're set up really well for this coming winter. We've got everything that you're looking for in here, so stop on by and take a gander.
You bet. And if somebody still wants to get out in for the late archery season, then Nicole, you got that stuff too.
Oh, heck yeah.
Well, Jarrett, I want to thank you very much for taking the time with our listeners here.
Thanks for having me, John.
Well, folks, you know, we need to take a break right now and hear from some of the fine sponsors that make this show possible every week. When we come back, we'll be talking to Hayward Area Fishing Guide Ty Sennett about this past fishing season and how everything went for everyone. So stay tuned. We'll be back right after these messages. hunters, and anglers. Hayward Bait and Bottle is your one-stop sport and bottle shop in Hayward. They have a huge selection of ice fishing gear, including portable shelters, power augers, electronics, beaver dam tip-ups, ice rods, and just about anything you'll need for ice fishing. They also have archery supplies, bows, crossbows, muzzleloaders, ammo, and much more to help you enjoy the outdoors. While you're there, check out the bottle shop for a full selection of beer, wine, and liquor, too. Hayward Bait and Bottle is your one-stop sport and bottle shop.
The Hayward Lakes Visitors and Convention Bureau in Sawyer County, Wisconsin, welcomes you to our Northwoods hometown. No matter the season, no matter the activity, you'll always be surrounded by our great outdoors. What more could you ask for in a vacation destination? Woods, waters, world-class events. Contact us for information on lodging, dining, attractions, events, trail conditions, and more. Order your free vacation guide and start planning your getaway today. Visit us at haywardlakes.com or call 1-800-724-2992.
The Sea-Doo pre-order sales event is on at Hayward Power Sports. The best way to guarantee a new 2023 for next year, and the only way to get the Sea-Doo RXPX Apex 300 Exclusive Edition. As a bonus, you'll get 2 years of BRP warranty coverage for free. Whether you're looking for a traditional Sea-Doo personal watercraft or a Sea-Doo switch pontoon boat, this is the best way to get what you want. Or we still have a few 2022 models in stock that offer no payments and no interest financing for 6 months. See Hayward Power Sports today, just 10 minutes east of Hayward on Highway 77.
Welcome back to another segment of this week's Wisconsin Northland Outdoors, and this part of the show is brought to you by the Hayward Lakes Visitor and Convention Bureau. For more information on lodging and vacationing here in the Hayward Lakes area, check out their website at haywardlakes.com. Well, folks, you know, one of the things we try to do on the show here is get different fishing guides and pro anglers on. Well, the other day I had a chance to talk to Hayward Area Fishing Guide Ty Sennett about this last open water fishing season that we just wrapped up and how everything went out there for most of the anglers.
Ty, good to have you on the show here. I haven't had you on for a while.
Yeah, thanks, John. Good to hear from you.
Musky season this year, I know the whole fishing season was a different challenge this year for a lot of people, wasn't it?
Yeah, they were definitely isolated this year in different areas, which is kind of makes it tough for the average person to come up here on vacation and score well. But if you did find those areas where they were at this year, they were kind of stacked up in those areas. So that was a good thing anyway.
Yeah, and it was a really short bite window, it seemed like.
You know, I didn't really run into that as much as a lot of other people on the Clearwater Lakes did. I know some guys that were fishing, you know, some of the deeper clear water had just, you know, 15 to half an hour bite windows, and that was it for the whole day. We didn't really run into that on the Chippewa flowage. It was pretty spread out, which was nice. Our midday bite was probably our best window, we had a great morning bite this year also, so I'd say the only thing that was not great was the evening bite.
Yeah, the evening bite definitely was off just about every place I fished, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, and it didn't seem to matter whether you were in northern Minnesota or where you were at. It was just the same thing. Everything was kind of universal. And I think it was because there's just so much food out there in the lakes this year. There was like a hatch of everything. And there were so many bug hatches, it was unbelievable.
Yeah, I'd say I probably don't pay attention as much as I should to bug hatches. And honestly, I don't even have my sonar hooked up. I do all side imaging. So when I'm driving across the lake, I don't even see that stuff, and it probably keeps me more focused by not having my sonar on.
Well, you run in the side imaging all the time. I mean, I run mine when I'm casting for muskies or anything, because even if you're spot locked, it'll still show you stuff coming in. Sometimes, like muskies, fish coming in on a sucker or a followed in or something.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And I mean, with walleye fish, I do a lot of walleye fishing, too, and it is so valuable for walleye fishing, weed lines, and when you're doing bog fishing, you can actually see if there's fish before you make a cast.
Well, I know you mentioned sonar. I'm running LiveScope, too. I run a lot of hummingbird stuff. I always have had, but due to not being able to get the stuff, I kind of wanted to go to the LiveScope for the panfish especially. You know, and that really is another option that people got out there that really can take you, you know, to a new angle as far as catching walleyes and crappies. But you really got to learn it, because it's not that easy to learn, I guess.
No, I mean, it takes you a little bit. I mean, one way to learn it pretty fast is to use it ice fishing. With ice fishing, there's not a lot of bells and whistles to using it. I mean, you lay it down on the ice and there's no glitches. You can figure it out very, very fast. So that's one way to figure it out pretty quick, and then just transfer it over to your boat. There's a couple different modes, of course. You can have it on down mode, perspective mode, or forward mode, and they're all pretty valuable. If you're vertical jigging, obviously that down mode is incredibly valuable. If you're casting open water, that forward mode is really nice, and if you're running weed lines, that perspective mode is really nice.
Well, you know, it's probably one, I'm saying it's one of the best tools I've came across, is that it wouldn't matter whether you're using the Hummingbird or the Garmin or any of the brands, the forward-facing sonar is probably one of the best tools for teaching people, you know, how to feel a bite and what's going on, because you've been there, done this. I mean, you get people in the boat, and one person can't, they're constantly got stuff chewing on their baits, and they tear the plastic up, but they don't get a bite, you know. Why are they getting a bite? Well, they're getting bites, and by watching that screen, they pick up real quick what it feels like when a fish is on there, and it's probably one of the best tools that I've seen where, you know, to teach people that and how fish react to stuff.
Yeah, it's a great tool for that. We had a conversation this year in the boat, and I was doing a seminar late in the season over at Deerfoot, and I was talking about it. I was telling a guy, if I watch you reel into a weed bed and you don't react, I know it's going to be a long day. It's like if you can physically feel your bait change and you don't react and jerk it, it's going to be tough to get you a fish. And that's something I tell a lot of clients. If you feel anything, you need to react, and that LiveScope helps for that. It's not a necessary tool. I don't use it in the boat at all. On the ice, I use it. It's one thing, like the one thing I ran into trouble with, guiding using LiveScope, isn't most people don't have it. I'd say 9 out of 10 people I take out fishing don't have LiveScope yet. Whether they ever get it, that's something. But I don't like to show people a lot of things that they can't duplicate. So I don't really use it much in the boat. I use the Sideman G more because pretty much everybody I take out already has that technology.
You bet. Well, you know, and there have been people out there using it for muskies. I mean, people running around just nothing but looking for muskies. I mean, to me, that's not musky fishing. You're out there, you're trying to figure out what weed bed, what point they're going to be on, and how to make your cast angle and everything else, rather than trying to spot the fish first. I mean,
yeah, but we call those snipers.
Snipers. Yeah. You know, they're doing it for walleyes and stuff, too. And I could see it to some point with other fish, but you know, muskies, it just they're too easy to pick up when you find them on that sonar. But you can spend an awful lot of time running around looking for that one fish, you know, because there's not near as many of them out there.
Right.
Find, yeah.
Yeah, like in Minnesota, that's where that term sniper came up. Like on Lake Vermilion, there's a lot of guys doing it. It's really popular over there. A lot of controversy with it in the tournament realm of things and open water. Like on Mille Lacs, it's kind of, there's some controversy there, more so on Vermilion than anywhere.
Yeah,
because a lot of the guys are getting them out in 50 foot of water.
Yeah.
A lot of those fish don't make it.
Well, yeah, you know, and that's the thing with musky fishing today, too. I think, you know, musky fishing, I want to talk a little bit about that. It's changed tremendously from when I started guiding 40 some years ago. And now there's a lot of, We gotta, you know, put this thing on Facebook. We gotta have 8 million pictures of it, and you know, and I think that the survivability of the fish, especially with, you know, intermediate to beginner anglers, it actually went down from where it was 20 years ago, catch and release, because they just gotta have the fish out of the water too much sometimes.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't see that too much out here on the Chippewa flowage. I rarely ever see a dead muskie out here. I didn't see one dead muskie this whole year. I would say that I don't know if I agree with that 100%. You know, if I think about back when I was, you know, 18, 20 years old, they were still keeping fish. So, you know, we've come a long ways in the last 30 years. I'd say people are more apt to get rid of a small fish fast nowadays because they don't have as much respect for them as we did 30 years ago. Like a 35 to 40 inch fish, people don't seem, a lot of the guys, and I think it's because of Facebook and everything, they don't have as much respect for catching a small fish nowadays.
Well, that's true.
So they, if anything, the only mishandling they would do, they would unhook it a little more rough than they would, you know, 20, 30 years ago.
Well, you know, and it, I guess it all depends on the angler that, you know, if we get more experienced anglers, I mean, you know, the fish get handled a lot different than,
yeah.
And especially if you're in the middle of the summertime when the water temperatures are really hot and that stuff too.
Yep.
Well, Ty, you know, if anybody's interested and wants information about your guide services for the wintertime here or for the summer, how do they get a hold of you?
Easiest way is to go to my website at tysennett.com, and that's TYSENNETT.com.
Well, Ty, it's been a pleasure having you on here. I need to get you on here more often.
Oh, it's good talking to you, John.
Oh, thank you.
All right, take care.
Well, folks, you know, next week we'll have Ty back on again talking about ice fishing. But right now we do need to take another break and hear from more of the fine sponsors that make this show possible every week. When we come back, we'll be talking to our local DNR wildlife biologist, Josh Siegel. So stay tuned. We'll be back right after these messages.
This year, Dr. Ostrander and his staff at Hayward Animal Hospital will be celebrating 30 years. They thank you for your patronage. Hayward Animal Hospital continues to accept new clients and offers urgent care appointments daily. For same-day urgent care or emergency surgery, make sure you call early in the day as appointments fill rapidly. They open at 8 a.m. Hayward Animal Hospital is located 1 mile east of Hayward on Highway B. Call 715-634-8971.
If you'd like to have your time fishing be more enjoyable and productive, hiring a fishing guide can be a good investment. Whether it's learning more about fish patterns throughout the year, learning how to use your depth finder to find the best spots and fish, learn how to use that GPS to get the most out of it, or learn better boat control, a day on the water with a guide can really help you to be a better angler, as well as make a day on the lake very enjoyable. To book a guide trip this year or get more information, you can find us on the internet at www.wiscnorthlandoutdoors.com and then just click on Area Guides. Welcome back to the last segment of this week's Wisconsin Northland Outdoors. Well, folks, you know, last week we had our local DNR wildlife biologist Josh Siegel on talking about the deer season. This week he's back on again. We're talking about wildlife habitat. Well, Josh, you know, when it comes to deer and other wildlife, habitat is everything, and habitat can actually change quite a bit over the years.
Yeah, no, that's a really good point there, John. You know, habitat is everything. That's the cover, that's the safety, the production from a standpoint of young, you know, where those does are dropping fawns during the rearing season and all that stuff. That's a really good point, and I think that's what we're really working on here locally, working with the local CDAC members, our local public landowners, owner groups, the national forest, the state lands, and county forest groups. You know, a lot of active logging going on in the landscape right now. From the private side of things, you know, we really recommend landowners talk with a certified forester and kind of get your land set up to produce not only timber value for the landowner themselves, but that key habitat, that turnover that the forest needs. You know, we mimic our forestry practices after natural disasters, blowdown events, tornadoes, fires, etc. That had happened on the landscape for many, many years. And when you have some type of disturbance, that forest is trying to heal itself. You know, like we get a cut on our finger, your finger, the skin cells start growing, start repairing it, that type of thing. So the forest is doing that same thing. It's trying to repair itself, get back to start growing. Well, that young, vibrant forest that's filled with grasses and forbs and young branches, saplings that those deer specifically can chew on. So that's that habitat influx that you need, you know. Deer are a creature of habit. If they have the food source, if they have the cover, that's where you're going to find the deer. A lot of hunters I talk with, if they're seeing some deer, they're seeing a fair amount of deer. Other hunters, if they're not seeing deer, they're not seeing any sign of anything. Well, ultimately, I believe that comes down to the habitat. You know, there's predator aspects that tie into that too, but, you know, one thing that comes with good cover and good habitat is good predation evasion too. So it makes it tougher on those predators, whether that's bears on the springtime with fawns, or whatever adult predator might be out there as well throughout the other months. It offers that cover, that hiding ability for those deer or other animals to get away from. And that's what that young, vibrant forest has with it, on top of the food aspect.
Well, you know, it's not just deer. It's everything. I mean, you're literally, and even with fish, habitat is everything. You have to have the right habitat for them. And it comes down to grouse populations and all the wildlife out there.
You're right. Turkey, we see big swings on. You know, last year, for example, I'm sure everyone remembers the ice storm that we had in early March. That really took a toll on our turkey numbers. You know, they don't snow roost like a grouse does, so they kind of expose themselves to the element. But in turn, you can see over summer, I'm sure most of the people driving the local roadways were seeing turkeys everywhere. You know, good springtime habitat, nesting habitat this year for grouse. Grouse and turkey appeared to be good. You know, we had some wet conditions, but it was warm, wet conditions. So survival appeared to be good. And you know, those turkey broods were flourishing all over the county up here. So expect to see some decent turkey numbers again here. And same for grouse. You know, we had good snow conditions last winter. Survival was good. Seen a lot of young birds on the landscape this year. So a couple tough springs, 21 and 20, both had kind of that wet, cold time frames. Really tough on nesting success. You see a lot of those young birds not make it through that. And now we're getting to that point where 2022 had a good nesting season, and ultimately that habitat, that cover, and the natural events or natural environment that we can't control, which is weather, was beneficial, and we're seeing those numbers bouncing back now too.
Well, you know, severity of winter, they actually have a winter severity index thing that you guys go by, but you know, I can remember going back over 40 years ago when I came up to this area up here, and the snow was a lot deeper out in the woods. It was waist deep, and the deer were yarding up in places. They would be in the cedar swamps yarding up. We haven't seen that behavior for years on the deer.
Yeah, there's still some historic deer yards out there. You know, we'll see some migrations, if you will, some of them more so expanded local deer that will still travel to some of those cedar hemlock swamps, those types of areas. But it's funny now, you know, kind of the new deer yard you see is active timber sales. You know, you can go out on the county forest, state land, private land, national forest, whatever, and if you find a logging job, you're probably going to find a pretty sizable group of deer following those logging equipment around and chewing on those treetops, etc. So we do see some of that, but it's kind of a double-edged sword. If we get a tough winter and a logging job kind of stales out and or stops for the winter, those deer may end up being stranded there as well. So depending what that movement looks like, typically we don't see that. No different than historic yards, they could get stuck in those as well too. So it all depends on that winter, that severity you're talking about.
Seems to be too, a lot of deer are hanging around where people are, where there's cabins on lakes and stuff, and a lot of it's because of feeding. But is that what the reason is?
The artificial feeding aspect is definitely common up in this area. It is legal in Sawyer County to bait and feed here. We just recognize that people understand kind of the process, so there's a legal amount, no more than 2 gallons can be placed out there. But the biggest thing from my perspective is you're introducing an artificial food source to that animal. So the biggest thing with deer being a rumen animal, it takes their body a while to adjust to a food source. So if you speak with any dairy farmer, it's a slow transition between feed types. You know, if you're going to transfer them from silage to haylage or something like that, you want to make sure that animal has an adjustment period where they're weaned off of the previous food type and kind of weaned into that new food type. And deer are no different. You know, if deer have been feeding on a corn feeder bait pile throughout the year, their body has the ability to break that down. Where we see issues is when new deer show up over winter to this artificial food site that may not have been eating on that. You know, they're foraging on grasses and bud ends and stuff like that off trees and branches. But all of a sudden they show up at an artificial food source and they start gorging themselves. They'll actually end up killing themselves. Acidosis is a process that the body goes through when it can't break down that food type. So they'll end up starving on a full belly. And that's something we want people to be very aware of is you don't want to introduce too much artificial food to a deer over winter, because it can actually be a negative thing. And that winter of 2013 I previously spoke about, we actually seen that happening on the landscape where a lot of people panicked, started putting artificial food on the landscape, and all of a sudden you started having impacts adversely to what you were hoping on that landscape.
Well, that's interesting stuff when it comes to that. I want to thank you for coming on here. A lot of great information.
Yeah, no problem, John. Thank you very much. And I'd love to come back on and talk about, our outdoor recreation and geared towards wildlife here in Sawyer County. So thank you very much for having me.
Thank you. Well, folks, you know, we're about out of time for this week's show. I'd like to remind everyone out there that if you miss a show, go to our website at wnoradio.net. From there, you can link to our podcast site, and the show is also on Spotify and Google Podcasts every week. And also, if you're looking for information on vacationing and lodging here in the Hayward Lakes area, check out the Hayward Lakes Visitor and Convention Bureau website at haywardlakes.com. Thanks for listening, folks. We're out of time, and we'll be back again next week with another interesting show for you.
Listen with me, I'm going to take you there to our Wisconsin outdoors, our Wisconsin outdoors.
This program has been produced and hosted entirely by Wisconsin Northland Outdoor Communications. Any and all views expressed are not necessarily those of the station.